Yo, welcome back to Real Ballers Read. In this episode, we talk about why Real Ballers Read, the origin of the phrase, why reading is important to us, how our relationship to reading has changed over time, and how you can start to strengthen your own reading habits today. We know you'll love the conversation. Here it is.
I think it's funny, like in the last couple of years, we have heard people say Real Ballers Read back to us in like a variety of different tones and emotions. And I think we really just had to have this podcast now to talk about the true meaning of it, say it in the tone that it was meant to be said in. I think a lot of folks have said it as questions, have said it like curious, but like not sure what we were really trying to say. They were just like thinking it was meant to be about athletes. And so in this conversation, we wanted to break down the whole story of the brand, why Real Ballers do read, why reading is important to us, and a little bit about what ballers are in general. So, Jan, like, what do you think is the first time that you heard Real Ballers Read? What is the story of that phrase?
You know, I think it was probably in middle school for us.
Yeah.
Maybe early in high school, but I think middle school time frame sounds about right. Just because we were getting taller and starting to play basketball more seriously, loving basketball really, but also at the same time being incredibly frustrated with people's so like quick to just assume that we do play basketball, think that all we do is care about sports or whatever. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we did have so many other interests, so many things that we dreamed about and cared about and wanted to pursue in our lives. But it was really our mom who would always step in to talk about how being good at anything like a sport or in any particular talent really doesn't mean much if you can't like read and learn and express yourself in a very particular, specific, intentional way. So, you know, she was the one that started saying Real Ballers Read at first. And it was kind of to defend our own growth as like young children at that time, young Black boys at that time. Mm-hmm. And for the longest, you know, I don't even know if we really took it to heart just because we were still caught up in kind of the insecurity of just who we were. Yeah. It definitely took some years once we got into college to really like appreciate just what Real Ballers Read means to us because, you know, our mom was constantly telling it to us.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's really deep, man, because it's like, as young Black boys, the almost number one role models that we have like are basketball players, I think.
And then rappers too.
Rappers too. But I think there's something about the sports, especially from a young age, that just seems so like glorious and incredible, and they're so visible. I think it's just such a powerful thing for our mom to have said to us, just given how our dad and mom were trying to raise us, and just knowing that that wasn't the only option. It was never like, yeah, my kids are just going to be NBA players. And I'm trying to think though, like when the first time we thought of the blog was, because we started reading books more for fun in like high school. And I just don't even know how the idea like took shape.
Yeah. Well, I kind of remember a bit, but you talking about just kind of like where we were at when we first started hearing Real Ballers Read did, and just the presence of, you know, basketball players, athletes as mm-hmm. people to look up to, role models. Mm-hmm. You know, you really did bring me back to our bedroom that we shared together. Also the ones, let's say, in like our place in Oakwood, right, where, you know, we had different rooms, and yet our dad was going back and forth, you know, telling us stories of like Kareem and Magic and all these classic basketball players who not only were great at what they did, but also, you know, just epitomized, you know, cool and kind of like the masculinity that he certainly aspired to, that he was kind of putting in front of us. And I think, you know, part of why I really appreciate our parents is that as much as we did love basketball and wanted to get really involved in it, right, what did they do? They bought you the basketball book, right? They bought us books about, you know, NBA fashion and you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's books, or even getting Jay-Z's Decoded, right?
The Walt Frazier Rock and Steady.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So it was kind of like surrounding our, you know, interest, our passion for basketball and all that did for us, surrounding that passion with books. And I think that definitely has gone a long way, not only for us personally, seeing how reading can really align with our interests and help us develop whatever we're, you know, trying to get better at. But it also definitely totally informs our advice to other people, right? Which is that if you are trying to get back into reading, or if you are raising a kid that you want to raise as a reader, it's always got to be about what they're interested in, and then just offering the books to supplement that interest. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that was definitely modeled for us growing up. And so it wasn't even just about the phrase itself, Real Ballers Read. It was kind of that whole environment of being like, here are people that you can learn about through books and like better appreciate, better model your life after, right? So,
No, one of my favorite reading memories that we used to have as a family was like the reading days, where we'd just all go up to our parents' room and read for a couple hours, man. And it's just crazy to think all of the things that our parents intentionally did for us to be who we are now. I mean, just very grateful. And
yeah, for sure. Shout out to them. And I think I think that that actually does tie in with, you know, the story of deciding on the blog, because of course we had those 3 to 4 years at Deerfield where we were on our own, but college definitely did signal a new kind of independence. And being out in our college experiences, getting to learn about different people, learning about ourselves in new ways, I think that was kind of the environment in which we could appreciate our parents a little more for all that they did for us. And that was kind of exemplified in the phrase "Real Ballers Read," right? But it was actually you that I think did plant the seed for it, because you started to track the books that you were reading in a spreadsheet. Right. You were both taking notes of like of the books that we were reading in our little composition notebooks. But once you got into the spreadsheet game, I think that added a new level of like taking it seriously, because within my freshman fall, after you keeping track of your books, I started keeping track of mine in that like first semester of college.
Right.
And it was probably within a year after that, like 2017, 2018 timeframe, that we started to think about meta mixtapes and Curious Daily and Real Ballers Read being kind of like the one that won out. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. No, I think even the story behind the story of me like first tracking what I was reading was our dad reading Anti-Fragile.
Oh, and really?
Yeah, because like,
that's hilarious. You know, I didn't know that.
Because he read it and was talking about it for years, right? It was just like all these axioms and puns off of the book, and was just applying it so much in everyday life that it got to the point where like, I just got to read this book so I know like what he's saying. And
so you can understand.
Yeah, exactly. Because he would just be saying it like, Anti-Fragile.
Yeah. But I
read it, I don't know, it was probably like eighth or ninth grade.
And I just took notes on all of the things that I read in the book. And then from there was when I started like just taking notes of everything that I was reading. Yeah. But I don't even think I started with the whole spreadsheet thing. That was you, actually. I was just taking notes of the things that I was reading.
Oh, well, maybe what it was that we were like, we were putting them on the Google Drive, right? Because we were literally taking photos. We were like, oh, wait a second. Like, you read these books and take notes. And then I read these books and take notes. We can share notes.
Right.
We had like the shared drive of all of our scanned PDF versions of the notebook notes.
I know. It's so beautiful looking back on that now, just because there was no like outside reason that we were doing that. Like, it was not for clout. It was not.
Definitely not for clout.
Yeah, it was. Definitely not for clout. It was literally just to learn and just like to share what we had learned with each other. There's literally no other reason. It was like completely private to the two of us. And yeah, we definitely had like a big, you know, like self-help phase. I think that was like the bulk of the books that we were reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a really important phase to just kind of learn those big meta life philosophies about like what it means to grow and learn. I think kind of self-help books in general are so important for developing that habit of reading, just from that like really powerful in reading experience, honestly. Yeah. And I think it's like so inspiring, you know. I think as time has gone on, like the self-help books for a lot of readers, you know, kind of get boring or uninspired. But I think especially starting out, those are really important. I'm trying to think of some that were really particularly good that stood out.
Yeah, well, the Power of Habit was a big one for me. And then, you know, The Power of Now was one of those books where like everybody was reading it. So I think that definitely changed my mind on a lot of things. I mean, for sure, like the Tim Ferriss books, once we got around to those, that was another one too. It was Malcolm Gladwell's books. Those aren't really self-help, but
they kind of are, though. Almost like a self-help for the like burgeoning intellectual.
Right. But I think part of what was so urgent about the self-help at first was that, you know, we're in school, we're reading these fictional books and doing all this academic analysis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was constantly left wondering, what is this? And why is it relevant to my life right now? How is it relevant? I think there was so much of a detachment in school from what we were supposed to be learning because it was good for us, when it was really just for grades and looking a certain way for college. Mm-hmm. And what I was always most interested in growing up was definitely just social life, what it means to be a person interacting with other people around you. What it means to like learn and grow, develop, be yourself, right? And self-help books are fully capture the full range of all of those kinds of interactions, right? Because you can have a self-help book like The Power of Habit that's specifically for how you live your day-to-day and be more intentional about building good habits versus bad ones. And then you can also have a book like How to Win Friends and Influence People, which tells you how important it is to just smile, right? Like, those weren't things that we're learning. We weren't learning that kind of stuff in a class, right? But that was the most urgent things for me, was around like, how do I interact with people in a way that's like mutually beneficial, right? And I think that's why self-help books are such a crucial like starting point, at least for me, and potentially for a lot of people, is because they do teach us how to like interact better and how to like relate to ourselves and others in a positive way.
Now looking back on it, which would you say is the most overrated self-help book?
Ooh, I might have to check the spreadsheet for that one.
No, I actually don't know if any are that overrated. I think the thing with the self-help books is that it's not ever the actual writing that's valued. It's the information. No one can say like, oh, Think and Grow Rich was written so beautifully. It's never hyped in that way. It's just like, this is the information that you have to get.
Yeah, I don't know. I think at the time that I was really reading them, because they are so focused on the information that you're getting out of them, like it's kind of hard to be disappointed, I guess, just because they give you the information and then you kind of have that transaction, right? And that's the end of it.
Which is your favorite?
One that I really want to reread is definitely the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin.
The OG self-help book.
Yeah, exactly. It's the OG. I mean, unless you're counting like Meditations or Aurelius or Confessions or something, but you know, I think that was one that had the most surprising advice in it. For example, you know, I'll never forget the story of him and the guy that were beefing, and he was like, oh, I'm gonna ask that guy for a favor in order for him to like me. And then he ends up asking the dude for a favor, and then they become friends. And he's like, yo, like if you're beefing with somebody, ask them to help you out. And it's just so counterintuitive, but it's like, what? Like that man's entire life was counterintuitive. You know? So I think that was really a fun read. And it's short, obviously, but it's something that I would like to return to, because maybe part of it as well is that because it's situated within an autobiography, it just reads more like a story than, you know, some of the like more piecemeal how-to self-help books. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I just want to tell the quick story of our great teacher, Bernie Baker. And it was so funny, man. We were covering 18th century America, and it comes up, you know, Ben Franklin's book. He's like, the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin. Like, what huge book industry or genre did this book spawn? And literally, like, we were guessing for like a minute, bro, and no one came up with the answer. And then he was like, self-help.
Dang.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, like that is insightful though. It wasn't until I had read the book later where I really saw that, just how meticulous, you know, he was even spreadsheeting each of his character traits.
Right.
Temperance, patience, courage, you know, every single day. And that level of dedication to your own personal growth is very inspiring. You know, Ben Franklin, did a lot of interesting things. One of the few white guys, you know, I'll look up to a little bit.
Yeah, that's real. I think that was definitely one of the major factors of getting less and less interested in the self-help space, is that it's so white. I mean,
damn,
you know, publishing in general has obviously got, you know, a lot of bigotry and discrimination still around. But I think in particular, the more that I learned about racism, sexism, classism, right? Like being in Bernie Baker's classes, learning about colonialism and all the like fucked up things that have made the world what it is, right? I was like, you can't tell me that like this all comes down to just individuals like choosing to help themselves, right? It seems like an open secret, right? That self-help is usually written by and for white men to, you know, continue to be successful in the system as it stands, you know? And so there was something that definitely felt really empty about that at first. I still do reflect on just like what it means to kind of recognize that we do have this ability to be intentional with our lives and learn and grow. But at the same time, recognize that it's a very limited like worldview when you're looking at such like big historical like problems.
Yeah, no, that's really, really true. Cause the self-help world view that like everything can be changed and fixed, and that the world is basically confined to your own body and mind. You just have to see it in a different way. I would say for me, though, my favorite self-help book ended up being, believe it or not, Awaken the Giant Within by Tony.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think that was a good one. That one, I just think, is such a funny book, too. He kind of opens it up with the whole Messiah complex. Like, I'm getting off the helicopter, like, kissing babies, like,
right,
signing chess.
Eight years ago, I was mopping floors at the gym. How did I get here?
Exactly. Yeah. And then breaks down, like, you know, all these different areas. But I just think that book is so interesting because he had read 700 books when he was growing up. And it really shows in that one. It's like, to me, the synthesis of a lot of different thoughts and ideas. And I think it's just a great starter.
Yeah, talk about surprising advice and tidbits. I mean, he was like, yeah, you need to be screaming your goals at the top of your lungs in the shower every day. You know, or he's like, oh yeah, like, you know, this woman had a serious fear of snakes, and all doctors said that it was impossible to cure her, and I cured her in 3 minutes. It's like, what? It's like, what, bro? But that stuff works. It works. See, yeah, even with Tony Robbins, I mean, like, I did love that book. I think it definitely does a great job kind of honoring the wonders of people's giants within, right? But at the same time, I was like, man, like, this guy's talking about cosmic power and how it can help you get a red Ferrari. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh yeah, you're gonna use all this power to just get yourself a mansion and, you know, a helicopter and, you know, everything like that. I was like, man, like, aren't there better things to be directing this towards? Maybe, probably.
Right. No, but I'm trying to think of some Black self-help authors too. Ed Lattimore, I think, was one for us.
Yeah,
that was really interesting. David Goggins.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Was another bender. See, even the whole category of self-help, though, when you take it to Black authors, it expands into something, I think, a lot more beautiful. Because a writer that I'm thinking about, you know, off the top of my head, is Baldwin, Malcolm X. It's like, those are actually, in the same sense, very self-help feeling. Even Coates, Between the World and Me, you know, has that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And I think it's something about just the clarity of the message and how easily it can be interpreted and immediately start to influence just the way that you live and like see the whole world.
Wow.
I would say many authors qualify there.
Right. Well, no, I mean,
Audre Lorde is huge. She's a,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think part of what you're describing, I've never really thought about it exactly this way, but a story of growth is always going to inspire that kind of potential in readers, right? Like, in terms of specifically for the reader themselves to grow in some way through reading the book and also through taking that story into their lives, you know, for the rest of their lives. And it's a completely different, like, model of quote unquote self-help than, you know, the kinds of books that we were just talking about, because with those, you kind of like just have to keep adding up and just keep reading and cranking through the books. But it only takes one beautiful story of Audre Lorde or Malcolm X or Asada, right? Like, you know, those Asada and X are constantly cited as references, the most mind-blowing, life-changing books that people have read.
Yeah.
And so much of that has to do with just the changes that they underwent in their own life and the values that they believed in.
Mm-hmm. And like, how has your relationship to reading changed since really taking Real Ballers Read seriously?
Well, I would say that like we were saying, at first, I just had so many urgent questions just around social life and who I was in terms of my own identity that nonfiction was seemed to be really helpful for that. I think especially because we weren't getting a whole lot of nonfiction in school as well. It just seemed like just its own entity entirely. But as we talked about, I kind of like lost interest in those, started picking up other books. I think as we got into Real Ballers Read, at first, you know, I had even more pressure to just read more books, which I don't think was very useful. I mean, you know, it was kind of like a phase and nothing wrong with that. But
yeah.
I think I was so caught up in showing that we did read a lot that I was just kind of like reading books because I thought that I could read them in a day or because the concepts were pretty easy. But remember, I read, you know, like over 80 books in a year and then realized I was like, oh, that wasn't really worth it. You know, like I still do read, you know, about a book a week. But my orientation to the books that I choose is completely different now, I think. I'm really looking for the story and, you know, following authors as well. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, once I read Beloved, I was like, man, now I really got to read Song of Solomon and then Sula. Right. And I want to read Jazz next. And I read Bluest Eye as well. So
Grace had a really funny reaction to Jazz. She was just like, what happened, yo? Like, what was this?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But
nah, that's a fact, though.
Yeah, I would say that as I've gotten older, I think that my tastes, so to speak, have definitely elevated, right? Just no, I think I'm reading better books. And
super true.
And I'm reading books that are challenging to me, but also more fulfilling because especially when you get into good fiction, I think there's so much more room for interpretation and really putting yourself into the story. And so there's a completely different kind of urgency there where I do think that I learn a lot more from the book and learn even more rereading it than you do your like traditional nonfiction book. Because of course you change over time, you go back to the book and then you're just rewarded for rereading it because there are all these things that you know, see differently now. And I think that fiction, especially Black fiction, definitely reflects more of the complexities, nuances of life in a way that can be appreciated. I would say that Jacqueline Woodson definitely changed the way that I read as well, just with how intentional she is about reading slowly. Because you can't, like, if you're going to read slowly, you have to be able to enjoy, like, every single word that you're reading, as well as the story and the concepts of the book, right? Like if you're reading like a nonfiction slowly, you're just gonna fall asleep, you know? I think learning from her really did kind of take reading into a new kind of like experience of really just feeling the words and the story and the characters themselves, you know?
So true. Yeah, I think that the podcast itself really changed the way that I read, given that there were so many novels.
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly.
Getting to share the passion for someone else's book of choice was really a fulfilling thing. I definitely think that I read less on a whole, like a lot less, honestly. But I think that's good too, because, right, it's more selective. The reading is deeper and more challenging, and I wouldn't go back to even that time. And well, it was like 2020 where we were just like reading all day, every day.
Yeah.
That's what we were doing.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm really glad that we've joined the community, started sharing our passion and just talking about it more with more mm-hmm. people. Cause mm-hmm. I think it is through the communication that we've gotten just sharper and just not talking between the two of us, even though we want to do it more now, we're kind of coming back to it in a different way. So.
Right. No, definitely. Yeah. On the point of selective too, I mean, I used to feel bad putting down a book. You know, I was always committed to finishing it. And now if I'm not fucking with it, like I just stop, you know, it's not worth it anymore. Yeah. And I think that was something that I had to kind of learn just out of evolving out of school, mm-hmm. and how we're kind of conditioned to think that you have to finish the book all the way through. And that's just not true. You know, like the minute that you stop enjoying the experience of reading it, like you're kind of just screwing yourself at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
How has your definition of a baller changed since starting? What do you think a baller is now?
I think being a baller really comes down to confidence.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously you got to be able to back it up. But how do you back it up? You put in reps, right? And whether that's in a specific craft, practicing, as well as even in reading about the stories of other people and kind of exercising your brain and soul in that way. I think it really does come down to that kind of like assurance in yourself that you have triumphed over a lot of struggles, you have achieved, and you're just getting warmed up. I think part of that confidence is also a hunger for striving even more. We had talked as well about how part of being a baller is being able to feel like you're intentional about your time and how you're using it. For us, valuing reading so much, I do feel like a baller now when I read, because I'm like, man, like I'm really enjoying this. I'm learning. Like, you can't necessarily count the influence that a book is having on you in the moment. But it goes a long way to the way that you see the world, the way you interact with other people. So it's definitely like a luxury and also kind of leisure, but not really, right? Because you're always putting in the work. Reading is kind of at a funny place of enjoying it and struggling at the same time. But I think that's a perfect place to be, in that sweet spot of like challenge and engagement, right?
Yes. I mean, I'm thinking about it now, and it's crazy to think that reading is more powerful now than it was 80 years ago. And I think on several levels, like just media in general is more complex. There's a variety of different forms and ways that you can give your attention. And yeah, I think we definitely have to find the numbers on literacy and how much folks were reading back in the day. But when you think about it now, the ability to focus on a book, when it becomes more difficult, it then also becomes more fulfilling and more powerful. And you become more of a rare quality person,
mm-hmm.
because you're able to focus for an extended period of time on just one thing. Mm-hmm. And I think for us, we've really tried to make reading as much as possible our default setting. I honestly, you know, don't think that that is the case with me now, but I like really want to get back to that place. I think since joining social media, it's been a big pro and con. Big pro, we've gotten to meet a lot of great people, but like the con obviously is like, you want to be on it.
And right.
I definitely feel like I can't even read for as long as I used to be able to, just because I'm always thinking about ideas or how to collaborate, how to create other content. I just want to get back to that real energy creating feeling that like reading does give me, of like just feeling so inspired and ready to write.
Yeah. And
just ready to think in general. And mm-hmm. yeah, for me too, like one of my biggest joys of reading is just being able to talk to other people about it, to have like an interesting thing to like share and say. I don't even know if my friends think about all the things that I say or share, but I really try to actively do it. Like, what about we introduce this idea that we haven't talked about or thought about yet, and how does it make us feel?
Right. Right.
I mean, another part of that, though, too, is doing that in a non-pretentious way. Like, how do we talk about books where, like, folks feel invited and not as excluded or unworthy just because, right, like, you're not reading as much?
Yeah, well, right. I mean, that's kind of the flip side of how enjoyable it is to talk with someone who has also read the book, is that, like, you bring it up with someone who hasn't, and it's just like everything else. Like, oh, this is like that one episode of SpongeBob, and then you're like, oh, I don't watch SpongeBob, I've never seen the show, and then you're just like, ah, dang, like, now we can't connect. Like, right? It just becomes like everything else in that way. But of course, for books, I think there is so much more of a deeper engagement with the book that it leads to, like, much better conversations than just like a one-off, like, skit reference or something.
I think for me, though, too, as we've started to read more challenging books, I think it has become a little harder to, like, talk about them or share them, because I'm still, like, figuring it out and trying to interpret them, and yeah, they're heavy. Like,
yeah.
If I was at dinner with, like, a friend, and I just bring up, like, the things that I'm, like, feeling from The Bluest Eye, we're both going to throw up, you know? And, like, if I just talk about Native Son in, like, the middle of a time when I'm meant to be having fun, it's kind of, like, the biggest buzzkill ever.
Right.
So I think that's another part of it, too, is, like, it's just not always socially the right time to talk about everything that I'm reading about.
Right. I mean, well, you know, you brought up the word pretentious, though, and obviously Baller does have, you know, some connotation of, right, like, high living. But what makes reading seem so pretentious? Like, is that more about how the person comes off? Is it something inherent to books, right? Because what do you think?
I immediately thought of the Eric Thomas line where he's like, "Don't think you deep because you read
it." Yeah, you know, exactly.
All I gotta read is one page, and I'm done with the book.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Right. And
I think it is all about the quote unquote marketing for whatever people visualize readers look like and sound like. They're usually an academic or a professor or, you know, someone that makes you feel uncomfortable and stuffy by how much they know, and they're using all these big words and terms. And yeah, I even can think about some of my philosophy professors, right, in college, where it's like, yeah, they've read a lot more than me, but it feels like it almost makes it harder for them to connect with me in the way that I feel seen or heard, right? And
wow,
I think that just comes with feeling like you have more knowledge than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking with our friend Sarah about our journeys in school, and she had put it an interesting way that I never really thought about, which is that she was saying that she used to care a lot more about being smart, being perceived as smart, feeling herself as, like, identifying with that as, like, her central, like, aspect of her, of who she is just, like, how smart she is. And I think I went through a similar journey of her. I used to care a lot more about being smart, and now I don't know, like, I just don't, I, like, obviously being smart is it's a gift, right? It's a responsibility, but it's also not my number one thing that I care about, like, identifying with. And I also don't think it's the number one thing to care about in, like, other people. But something about, there is something about identifying with smartness that makes it really easy to like judge people who don't seem as smart, or like, you know, if you, because you're so confident in yourself as being smart, like if someone comes off in a way that you don't recognize, it's so easy to just judge them as like dumb. And I think that's just, that's dumb. It's like judging someone else is dumb because right. you think you're smart. And so I don't read anymore to like think that I'm smart or to know that I'm smart, right?
Yeah.
Maybe I take it for granted just because, you know, I have read a lot. But I think there are so many more important things to read for than just like coming off as smart. And I think that's where the whole dynamic around being pretentious is coming from, because a lot of people that do care about reading usually are people that kind of grew up caring about being smart and being refined or whatever. So then they just like look down on like lower forms of culture, like TV and stuff. But we grew up on TV. We grew up on movies, music, like sports, everything, right? So I think we've kind of put books in the context of like all these other things that we love and enjoy. So of course, books are important, but
I have a interesting comparison to throw in here.
Mm-hmm.
What if the same reason why we feel someone who read a lot of books is pretentious is the same reason why we kind of distrust or have some weird mix of negative feelings towards someone who was born rich? It's like an unearned inheritance that doesn't come from your experience, meaning like someone can read a lot of books but not have lived any of that life. And there's almost this intuitive feeling of that experience is unnecessary and superfluous.
Well, okay. I see exactly what you're saying. Because it's kind of like, right? Well, no, because it's kind of like you can live a very full life of experiences and never read a book and be totally fine. But if you've only read books your entire life, like,
you would.
But what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? And like, and I think that was something that's another thing that we've definitely had to think through in the last few years, especially, is how I think book smarts and like street smarts are always kind of like put as opposites to each other. And, you know, maybe they are, but I think it's a little fuzzier than that. Because of course, like, or maybe there's like a limitation to it, because books, for me at least, have enabled me to have like great experiences and see the world in a particular way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always prioritize the experiences over, you know, necessarily books, right? Even with our trip to Europe just now. But yeah, again, like books supplement like your larger life, right? They're not supposed to be your entire life. They're just supposed to be a part of it that can help the rest of it.
Yes.
And I think that's something that we kind of had to think through. It's similar to the whole idea of like books being antisocial. So you're like either interacting with people or you're interacting with books.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, every time you're reading a book, you are interacting with others, right? You're interacting with the author. You're setting yourself up to interact with other people that have read the book. You know, I think I have come to appreciate reading as a pro-social activity, especially now that we're on Instagram and, you know, in the community, in a way that I didn't before, right? Because it always seemed like, oh, you should feel bad for reading because you're doing it alone, right? And like, it's not like everyone's just watching the same Netflix show, but that's not the case.
Wow, dog. Nah, that's a really interesting point. I think it even helps me in thinking about reading. Do you think Bookstagram, though, is an echo chamber? Let's cut out that quite.
Okay.
Thought of it for some odd reason. This is fire. This is.
I mean, yeah, I think it is. But like, who isn't an echo chamber right now? You know.
Exactly. No, it's just how social media is created.
And I think as well, like, just off of the fact that we're all in different places, there's even more of an urge to like want to be in the same conversation with other people, which means being on the same books. And I see nothing wrong with that. You know, I think I've gotten to the point, I used to care a lot more about, you know, the aesthetics of the book and like what I was reading. And I don't care about that as much now. I think what's most important for me is that I continue to read books that I'm like interested in and like urgently want to read, you know? And that's more about me developing as a reader and a writer and just, you know, as a person in general. But you know, that takes time, right? That takes time. And also, like, you know, that's how I wanted it to be, right? Like, you could want to keep up with what everyone's reading too, and that's, there's nothing wrong with that.
Is there anything that we didn't explain or go over? I mean, this has been fire, I think.
Yeah, well,
or a question that we want to ask.
Yeah, well, you know, another way to phrase the title of this episode is, why Real Ballers Read? Like, why are we doing this as opposed to something else? Why do we care about not only our own reading habit, but making reading something that's more accessible, enjoyable, and interesting to other people, right?
Man, we didn't even talk about this, bro. And this is the biggest part of it, is literally that school ruins reading for a lot of folks. And we talk about that, have talked about it throughout the podcast. What I think it's really important to highlight now is, like, we feel the responsibility to make this messaging as helpful and positive towards replacing that narrative, especially in young folks' minds, that like reading is something that needs to be tedious and unfun and like things that they're graded on, because that's not real life at all.
And yeah, it's crazy how it's not real life, but it's still experience, right? Like, school ruins reading for most people, including us, for a second, off of the real life experience of like reading books that you're not interested in, right? That might be like canon, but are totally irrelevant and not something that you would pick for yourself. And yeah, it's not real life, but also like people have that visceral experience, and books are, they're kind of used as weapons in a way to kind of like condition and formalize you in a very particular way. Right. And people are naturally defensive of that, you know? And so I think it's not only the messaging for us, but it's something about building out that experience of like actually enjoying a book, right? I think that's what we're still looking for, not only for ourselves, but for everyone.
Yeah. And I think there are so many of us too that, yeah, just come out of school, never wanting to read a book again. And for folks in our age range too, I think this is a really important message to hear. And even hearing, I think, from you, Jen, that it's like a pro-social thing to be doing is like really important, because part of talking about this activity more and talking about it with other influencers is making it acceptable
and more cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So
yeah, no, that's real. Because I mean, I think I'm curious what you think about this comparison as well, but I think about all of meditation, right? And how much that's kind of been propped up as just like an important like skill, habit to have, or mindfulness. I totally believe in it as well, I'm sure. I don't really practice it myself necessarily, but you're completely, let's say, in the classic example of just sitting with your eyes closed and just trying to empty your mind out, right? There's the practice of that, which all these people put attention on and have all these stats for how beneficial it is.
Yeah.
And then what I think about is how you could have a very similar experience of course, like being quiet, sitting by yourself, but in the company of a story or a book, right? It's a very gentle experience in terms of it's just words on a page. and yet it's still very stimulating to our minds and to our spirits and just who we are. And yet there doesn't seem to be nearly as much like attention paid to how helpful it can be to go into that kind of a meditative state, but through a story, right? And through the flow of a book and someone else's imagination. And of course, they're both probably really beneficial, especially together. But for me, definitely reading has that kind of like meditative quality of being able to be alone. But every time that I read, I feel like I go into my interactions with Simone and you and everyone around me so much better, because I was able to make that time for myself to do what I wanted to do, to learn, connect, to feel entertained in a way. And then it just makes me want to engage with people in real life even more. And that's what I was getting at with how it's pro-social, just at that like fundamental level of what you're doing.
Right. And I think a big part of meditation being so popular and like all the science coming out about it is we've literally seen the creation of it as an industry, like multi-billion dollar mindfulness. Like there's been so much money made out of that. I feel like for books, it just hasn't been treated the same at all, because that check is just has been split, you know, for hundreds of years now, and split so many different ways. And it's just a totally different market that folks have less belief in, and like the Silicon Valley sense, because the mindfulness was able to be latched on to that whole market too.
So. Right. No, absolutely. And of course, both like to that point about mindfulness being latched on to Silicon Valley, I think there is definitely a way of having reading being latched on to, oh, you read so that you can be more productive and then just make more money for the system. And I think we're like, that's not how we're thinking about things at all. I mean, of course, there is the visceral experience of enjoying it and learning and growing. And of course, more power to you if that contributes to your whole lifestyle and just general health and well-being. But I think we constantly think about, you know, Eve Ewing's point in Black Futures, just about how choosing what you want to read is like, it's a radical act, right? And definitely in the trajectory of the books that we've read, I mean, they definitely do cultivate you as an independent thinker, but also someone who cares about other people. You start to see things totally differently when you're reading books, right? As opposed to just taking whatever they tell you in school as like total facts, right? I mean, you read any like history book, like let's say Indigenous people's history, Black history, and you get a totally different perspective on the things that we were kind of like brainwashed in school for.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, on that same point though too, reading is such a important and powerful act for the very reasons we talked about, like echo chambers and feedback, like especially now on the internet, information and the truth is so fractionated into all these different groups where everyone is living in their own realities.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to just be making more connections across those groups, across different people and beliefs. And I think that comes with a deeper understanding of history and the world in general. And that comes from the thoughtfulness of not having a confirmation bias.
We've talked about this before too, just how books are such low stakes ways to learn about something or interact with somebody who might disagree with you. It's way different putting your thoughts on Twitter or responding to someone else's thoughts on Twitter and then having the potential for backlash and getting canceled or whatever. But when you're reading a book, man, like I really am bothered by this worldview or bothered by this problem in the world. And then you can read about it and then come to your own decision around it without having to worry about, you know, getting put on blast for it. And, you know, of course, that's not the main reason to read. It's just to avoid that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's such a a much more intimate experience because it's off Wi-Fi, it's off the phones, right? It's a private experience that's at the same time very public in terms of, you know, how you interact with people after you read.
And that's a great point. And, you know, I never would have thought that I would have brought up this guy's name in this podcast episode. But that's why I actually appreciate Thomas Sowell, because I think he's so thoughtful in the way that he writes. But through reading his books, I have like seen specifically why I disagree with his worldview in a lot of different ways.
Wow.
You know, I don't know the economics side as much, but, you know, he has a very political understanding of history that I think that he tries to ground in another field. Mm-hmm. And which I think I benefited from, like, carefully thinking through his arguments and not just hearing Republican talking points on XYZ, probably Fox News channel. So
that's so true. That's very true.
A lot of Republicans too could benefit a lot from him. So
just reading in general, you know.
Democrats too. Everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
Really everybody.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and that's kind of what we were saying about, you know, reading being a small part of your life that can help every other part of it. I mean, this isn't like just reading nonstop all the time, right? This is literally just, you know, reading a little bit a day. If you're reading something that you're really interested in, like maybe more, but that's totally up to you. You know, it's kind of about like having the awareness of how it can fit into your life in a beneficial way for you.
What do you think is the best way for like someone who's hearing this podcast, like, to make their reading habit stronger?
A couple things come to mind. First is definitely being as clear as possible about what you're interested in, passionate about, what you aspire towards, what your goals in life are. Because just even writing down three of those things will probably give you like 500, 1,000 books that you could possibly read to kind of make progress in those areas. I think definitely aligning the books that you're reading as much as possible with what you're really interested in, what you urgently and importantly want to learn about, will always help. Because then, let's say, like, you're working or you're studying, you're going about your day, you know, doing all the little things that we do on a day-to-day basis. And then you have a minute, maybe it's literally a minute, maybe it's five, maybe it's 30 or an hour, but you're like, oh, you know, what would be a great way to relax a little bit and still feel productive and learn in a new way is like reading this book that's aligned with the interests that I care about, you know? And so I think that for sure is the best way of just like seeing how books can fit into your life in a beneficial way. And then second would just be, you know, starting small. I mean, there are a lot of times, especially when I'm really busy, where my goal for the day is just to open a book. You know, if it's just like literally opening it, reading like a sentence and being like, nah, I really don't have the attention for this, close it, that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. But chances are when you set the bar that low, like, you'll read a little bit and then be like, oh, you know what? I actually do have a few more minutes, or I'm really interested in this story, and I lose track of time. And next thing you know, you're reading a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. But at least just in that act of opening a book or saying, oh, I'm only going to read like a page, or having some ridiculously low bar, I think that always makes it easier to like get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
Would you say differently, or do you have something else you think?
Oh man, I think our mindsets on how to build the reading habits are similar. I think as much as you can make it enjoyable and fun and aligned with your interests, the stronger the habit will be.
Mm-hmm. In general. Yeah, I would say if there is a third thing, and maybe this is the most important, is definitely having like a reading buddy or something. because of course we had each other. We had people around us, like our parents, as we were talking about, who cared about reading. But I think a part of the strength of Real Ballers Read for ourselves, you and I, Miles, and for anybody else, is really just about expressing the power of like a tight relationship. And you don't even have to have the same interests or the same schedule or anything. It's just that kind of intention to learn and read and grow and develop in a particular way. And having a buddy in that sense always will help you go a lot further than just going on your own.
Exactly, man. Exactly.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Real Ballers Read. Before you go, we want to ask you for a quick favor. If you enjoyed this episode and learned anything, please give us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We'd love to hear your feedback. Follow us on Instagram as well, @RealBallersRead. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.